Hello and welcome to the Illinois Radio Reader. I'm Janelle Eckerman and today I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph for Monday, July 27, 2026. And from the front page, the headline is Pride Fills Downtown, and there's a selection of photos. Crowds celebrate LGBTQ plus equality, belonging in Bloomington Normal. And the first main photo is captioned, Thousands gather Saturday at the 8th Annual Bloomington Normal Pride Fest in downtown Bloomington. Pride Fest supports education, family, diversity, equality, peace and love, said event founder and organiser Jan Lancaster, owner of The Bistro. The event also featured live performances, food, over 150 local vendors and non-profit organisations. And the next photo is captioned, 3-year-old Gloria Medema of Bloomington plays with an inflatable sign Saturday on the McLean County Museum of History grounds at the 8th Annual Bloomington Normal Pride Fest in downtown Bloomington. And the next photo is captioned, Jan Lancaster, owner of The Bistro, Bloomington Normal's only gay bar, dances with young Violet Irving with her parents nearby as the festivities ramp up Saturday at the 8th Annual Bloomington Normal Pride Fest in downtown Bloomington. And those photos were courtesy of D. Jack Alkaya from the Pantograph. And the remaining photos are on page A4. I'll now move on to page A2 and include some world news. And the first article is Analysis, Separate Talks, Test Trade Pact. And the article is written by Promit Mukherjee and Emily Green and David Lauder from Reuters. Separate US negotiating tracks for Canada and Mexico are testing a trilateral free trade zone that defined North America's economy for 32 years, with the US potentially forcing concessions on Canada that Mexico agrees to in its more advanced talks. President Donald Trump's decision not to extend the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement for another 16 years on July 1 leaves the trade deal in force but requires annual reviews until all three countries either agree on its renewal or it expires in 2036. Trump ratcheted up pressure on Canada on July 20 by imposing 50% tariffs on a wide range of goods, with his administration saying it responded to Canadian policies on autos and dairy, as well as provincial alcohol bans. The tariffs take effect August 19. The nations will continue to engage with one another bilaterally, according to people from all three countries familiar with the talks. They expressed hope that agreements struck between two countries could be brought together within a trilateral framework. The economic stakes are high for Canada and Mexico, which send most of their exports to the US, and for automakers and other companies whose production networks cross North American borders several times. The difficulty will be keeping the separate processes aligned to each country's priorities when Canada and Mexico have different trade realities and political constraints. And given strained relations between Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, trade experts noted. Carney said Tuesday he and Trump agreed to intensify talks. The challenge is to keep those two processes moving in the same direction so that they feed into the trilateral mindset that Canada and Mexico have and that the US has expressed doubts about, said Juan Carlos Baker, a former senior Mexican trade negotiator. Mexico and Canada wanted to extend the trilateral pact, but agreed to bilateral talks with Washington. The three economies conduct about $1.6 trillion in annual goods trade under the agreement, which also shielded Canada and Mexico from many of Trump's global tariffs. Trump negotiated the agreement known as USMCA during his first term, replacing the 1994 North American Free Trade Agreement. Mexico started its third round of formal bilateral talks Tuesday. Canada has had no formal talks, but its minister in charge of US trade, Dominic LeBlanc, has phone calls and occasional meetings in Washington with U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer. Canada hopes the US will remove steel and aluminium tariffs and avoid the new tariffs set for August. A Mexican official familiar with the negotiations said US-Mexico talks were about 6 months more advanced than informal US-Canada discussions and could give Mexico greater investment certainty and potentially better terms in areas such as steel tariffs. Mexican and US officials broadly agree on several problems they want to address, the official said, including declining US manufacturing employment, growing use of Asian components in North American vehicles, and transshipment of goods from outside the region. Mexico and the US are in agreement about the goals, the official said. What we are discussing is how to reach them. Mexico already took steps to address some US complaints, including imposing tariffs on non-free trade partners, tightening customs rules, and addressing intellectual property concerns. Mexico has been more accommodating than Canada, people familiar with both countries' strategies said. Carney on Tuesday suggested Canadian provinces wait to put US alcohol back on shelves until a broader trade agreement is reached. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum made concessions that she can frame as advancing Mexico's priorities, including tighter border security, reduced fentanyl trafficking, and greater scrutiny of Chinese investment. Carney won the election last year, promising to stand up to Trump. She has more degrees of freedom to operate than Prime Minister Carney does, Baker said of Sheinbaum. Canadian officials dispute the idea that Canada is behind. Gabrielle Brunet, spokesperson for LeBlanc, said Canada is ready to expedite talks on the trade pact. To that end, Canada has put forward proposals that are fair, balanced, and good for the broader North American economy, he added. Mexico's economy ministry declined to comment. Greer said Wednesday he hoped to strike some interim trade agreements with Mexico and Canada this year while tracking thornier changes of the USMCA, such as stricter rules of origin, in 2027. The core risk for Canada and Mexico is that bilateral talks could become the blueprint that one country must either accept or challenge and delay a trilateral deal. Neither government is expected to ask the other to hold back from reaching an advantageous bilateral deal. Mexico will do what's best for Mexico, but it also wants to keep the USMCA trilateral and would resist proposals that explicitly broke apart the agreement, Baker said. Carney also sought to improve relations with Mexico. The Mexican official said attacking the trade pact could remain politically useful to Trump among voters who blame trade agreements for manufacturing job losses ahead of US midterm elections. Canadian negotiators must use the 30-day window before the new tariffs take effect to make rapid progress, said Matthew Holmes, executive vice president at the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, a lobby group that advises the government on US trade relations. Canada signaled it will not accept unfavorable terms merely to close the talks quickly, and the 10-year review timeframe could allow Carney to negotiate with a different US president. What I've heard from the Prime Minister and other members of the negotiation team is, "We want a good deal for Canada," Holmes said. "Not a fast deal for Canada." And continuing on with today's reading of the Pantograph, from page A2, I'll read today's flicked fact. Question: which of these predates the city itself? Number 1, Lucca Grill. Number 2, the building that houses the BCPA. Number 3, Cook Hall at ISU. And number 4, Evergreen Cemetery. And 5, definitely not me. The answer is number 4. Bloomington was founded in 1831, but records show burials at Evergreen Cemetery dating back to the 1820s. Cook Hall just turned 129, built in 1897. And as always from the Pantograph, our commitment to accuracy. We want you to tell us about issues regarding accuracy and fairness. Contact 309-820-3242 or email ojacobs@pantograph.com. See past corrections at pantograph.com/corrections. And also from the same page in How Time Flies. 100 years ago, July 27, 1926. Within the coming week, the Chicago and Alton Freight House at Bloomington will start upon its journey to its new site near the corner of Chestnut and Allen Streets. Contractor E.W. Plant of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, announced that he would utilize 480 jacks to raise the building and place it on rollers. Great care will be taken in solidity of this roadway, as it is of prime importance that it be level and placed upon a substantial foundation. Once the track is laid, the building elevated and resting upon rollers, and the rollers resting upon the rails, a team of horses will wind a cable around a capstan, and inch by inch, the great building will move toward its new site. The contractor is confident that a single team will be sufficient to handle the great building, although its estimated weight is 60,000 to 75,000 tons. And 75 years ago today, on July 27, 1951, the Association of Commerce will sponsor a contest to produce a new slogan for Bloomington. Preston Ensign, chairman of the A of C Publicity and Public Relations Committee, announced, "There are three slogans being used in Bloomington now: the Evergreen City, the Balanced City, and the Hub of the Corn Belt." And 50 years ago today, on July 27, 1976, a violent thunderstorm broke the heat, the evening of July 26, as it roared through the Bloomington Normal area. Winds hit nearly 60 miles an hour and temperatures dropped more than 20 degrees. And 25 years ago today, on July 27, 2001, the McLean County Historical Society will correct a construction flaw on downtown's oldest building. The red oak wood used in the restoration of the Miller Davis Building in 1980 will be replaced by cypress. I'll now include from page B6 the weather report, Bloomington's five-day forecast. Today, a stray thunderstorm. It'll be hot and humid, and the wind will be from the south at 10 to 20 miles per hour, and the temperature 94 degrees. And tonight it'll be clear, warm and very humid, and the wind will be from the west-southwest at 7 to 14 miles per hour, and the temperature 72 degrees. On Tuesday, it'll be mostly sunny and less humid, and the wind will be from the north-northeast at 8 to 16 miles per hour. There'll be a high of 86 degrees with a low of 61 degrees. And on Wednesday, there'll be plenty of sun, and the wind will be from the north-northeast at 6 to 12 miles per hour. There'll be a high of 85 degrees with a low of 62 degrees. And on Thursday, there'll be intervals of clouds and sun, and the wind will be from the east-southeast at 4 to 8 miles per hour. There'll be a high of 85 degrees with a low of 66 degrees. And on Friday, there'll be showers around in the PM. The wind will be from the south-southeast at 7 to 14 miles per hour. There'll be a high of 81 degrees with a low of 66 degrees. And in the regional outlook, it'll be breezy, hot and humid today with a stray thunderstorm. Expect 6 to 10 hours of sunshine with a 55% chance of precipitation and average relative humidity 75%. Drying conditions will be fair, uncomfortably humid tonight, and average relative humidity 90%, and it'll be mostly sunny tomorrow. And in Skywatch, sunrise will be at 5:48 a.m. today and sunset 8:16 p.m. Moonrise will be at 7:28 p.m. and moonset at 3:33 a.m. Full moon will be July 29, last quarter August 5. New moon August 12 and the first quarter August 19. And today's air quality from airnow.gov will be moderate. The UV index today will be 10. And the pollen today from the National Allergy Bureau, grasses will be low, trees low, weeds low, and mould low. And the next article is also from page B6, and the title is Black Teen's Death to Go to Grand Jury by Andrew Hay. a grand jury in Mississippi will review the circumstances around the death of Nolan Wells before the evidence is made public in the case of the black teenager whose body was found in the water off an island he visited with white friends, a prosecutor said this week, but as of Friday did not say when jurors would take up the matter. This week, an attorney for the teenager's family said a private autopsy could not rule out foul play. Civil rights leaders and social media amplified the family's calls for answers, feeding a debate about the safety of young black Americans in predominantly white environments. The district attorney for Jackson County said that, as a matter of routine, case information would be withheld from the public to protect the integrity of the grand jury, which will decide if there is evidence a crime took place and someone should be charged. Every death in the county, except those of natural causes and non-criminal car wrecks, is presented to your grand jury, Jackson County District Attorney Angel Myers-McIlrath said in a video message Thursday. Nolan's case is being handled the same way. The prosecutor did not respond to questions from Reuters about when jurors would be convened and what kinds of evidence they would consider. She promised a thorough, careful, and uncompromised investigation into a case that became a flashpoint for race relations in America. Wells, 18, died after he went to a 4th of July party on Horn Island with three white friends he knew since high school in nearby Ocean Springs, Mississippi. The three friends returned to the mainland without him and had his mobile phone, according to the family's lawyer, Ben Crump. A pathologist who conducted an independent autopsy of Wells on behalf of his family could not draw conclusions, Crump told a news conference Wednesday. Pathologist Roger Mitchell reported red discoloration on the back of Wells' head was of great concern, Crump said. To determine the cause of the discoloration, Mitchell requested additional information from Mississippi authorities who carried out the first autopsy. In his report, Mitchell said he was unable to directly examine Wells' stomach and airways for the presence of water as they were removed from his body by the first autopsy. He found no fractures and no evidence of deep tissue injuries. Among outstanding questions regarding Wells' death were the circumstances that led him to enter the water, his body position when he was found, whether there was water in his airways, and whether there was evidence of injuries to his neck and head, Mitchell wrote in his report. His body was found fully clothed and face down. This pathologist cannot rule out if any intervening non-accidental factors contributed to or caused the death of Nolan Wells, Mitchell wrote. And the next article I'll include in today's reading of the Panagraph is from page A3 and it's in World News. Germany. Police kill suspect after Pride attack. Authorities call incident terrorism. And it's written by Marcus Wakert, Miranda Murray and Kirsty Knoll. Berlin. Berlin police shot and killed a known Islamist suspected of driving a minivan into a crowd near a major LGBTQ pride gathering, they said Sunday on social media, after he tried to attack them with a bladed weapon at an allotment garden complex in the suburb of Spandau. According to initial findings, he ran towards officers while armed with a bladed weapon. Police subsequently opened fire, they wrote. Despite immediate resuscitation efforts by the Berlin Fire Department, he died at the scene. Earlier, Germany launched a national manhunt for the suspect in Saturday night's attack, which killed one person and injured 29 others. Everything we see here indicates that we are dealing with an Islamist terrorist attack, German Interior Minister Alexander Dobrindt told reporters at the scene, where he said the van drove down a pavement, running over pedestrians. The attack happened in the Tiergarten Park near the Brandenburg Gate about 10 p.m. Saturday, not far from one of Europe's biggest annual LGBTQ Pride celebrations, Christopher Street Day. The suspected perpetrator attracted attention in the past through a high number of criminal offences, through radicalisation, through membership of the Islamist scene, Dobrindt said, adding he was a German citizen with a Lebanese background, born in Germany in 2005. Berlin Mayor Kai Wegner, standing next to Dobrindt, said the incident was probably an Islamist terrorist attack on our way of living alongside one another, on our liberal democracy, our openness and our freedom. Berlin police identified the suspect as Abdul B., 21, and published his picture, asking the public for information on his whereabouts. They also warned the public not to approach him, saying he was possibly armed and dangerous. Security sources told Reuters the suspect was released from juvenile detention only 2 months earlier. They said he was known to domestic intelligence and was among the hundreds of people classed as potentially dangerous, a label that usually leads to scrutiny or monitoring. After mowing people down with the vehicle, the attacker injured some with a bladed weapon, thought to have been a machete, Dobrindt said. The fire service said overnight that three of the injured were in life-threatening condition. It was unclear whether the perpetrator acted alone, since police said more than one person may have gotten out of the van. The Berlin broadcaster RBB said an Iranian who was a passenger in the vehicle was arrested. Reuters TV footage from the scene Sunday morning showed a white minivan crumpled into a tree. The mass circulation newspaper Bild said it was a delivery vehicle that Abdul B rented. German media reported the police searched the suspect's Berlin apartment. Thousands of people, some carrying the LGBT rainbow flag, attended a vigil at Berlin's Brandenburg Gate. Some carried placards with slogans such as "Hatred Kills," while others cried and hugged one another. At the Tiergarten Park, people lit candles and left flowers. Ahead of a memorial service at St. Mary's Church in Berlin, centre-right Chancellor Friedrich Merz urged Germans to protect liberal values. "We will defend the freedom, openness and liberal spirit of our lives and our society with everything we can do," he said. The attack came at a sensitive time for conservative Merz's unpopular coalition government, which is going through a bruising cabinet reshuffle as critics accuse it of being ineffective. State elections take place in 2 months with the far-right opposition party, Alternative for Germany, AfD, campaigning on issues including immigration and security in a bid to secure control of a regional government for the first time. The AfD was quick to comment on the attack. "We will not allow religious extremists to divide our country with violence and intolerance," AfD co-chief Tino Chirupala said on social media. And the next article, advocates voice grief, anger and solidarity, and it's written by Miranda Murray. Berlin. Members of Berlin's LGBTQ community and others voiced grief, anger and solidarity Sunday after a vehicle rammed into crowds at the city's annual Christopher Street Day Pride celebrations, killing one person and injuring more than a dozen. Organisers of the parade cancelled several related events after Saturday night's attack, including a breakfast market at a popular food hall and a post-parade clean-up. Instead, thousands of people gathered for a community vigil at 2 p.m. in Pariser Platz, the square surrounding the Brandenburg Gate, just a few hundred metres from where the attack took place. The event hit maximum capacity about 30 minutes after beginning, despite on and off rain, with police limiting attendance due to security precautions, according to organisers. Attendees held a moment of silence for the victims and waved pride flags, with one holding an oversized sign reading, "From grief to anger to resistance." German Chancellor Friedrich Merz and Justice Minister Stephanie Hubig attended a memorial service at the medieval St. Mary's Church. Alfonso Pandisano, the Berlin State Government's LGBTQ Affairs Commissioner, said he was at Brandenburg Gate when everything changed in a matter of moments. "To you, my dear community, I know that many of you are afraid right now. I won't sugarcoat it. I am too. But you are not alone in this fear, in your grief and in your anger," he wrote on the social media platform Instagram. Up to 1 million people participate in Berlin's CSD parade each year, according to city authorities. The march through Berlin's Green Heart, the Tiergarten Park, brings together groups and supporters campaigning for the rights and inclusion of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender and intersex people. The event, first held in 1979, takes its name from Christopher Street in New York's Greenwich Village, commemorating the 1969 Stonewall Uprising against police raids and harassment. Berlin long occupied a central place in the history of gay rights and culture, starting when sexologist Magnus Hirschfeld founded what is regarded as the world's first gay rights organisation in 1897. The city became an international hub of gay and lesbian life during the liberal Weimar era, but the flourishing cultural scene that emerged was largely destroyed under Nazi rule. Despite continued discrimination after World War II and during Germany's division, gay communities gradually re-emerged in Berlin through bars, social organisations and political activism. I hope that many people realise how important it is that we stay strongly together, now more than ever. German rapper Ikenbell, who was part of the stage show for the first day of CSD, wrote on Instagram. And from Nation and World News, some more articles from Digest. And the first is electricity. The US Energy Department issued an emergency order Sunday authorizing grid operator Southwest Power Pool, which serves parts of 17 states in a territory that is home to 20 million people, to deploy idle power sources to help prevent heatwave blackouts. Romania. A Romanian F-16 fighter jet pilot shot down a Russian drone over the Black Sea, the Defence Ministry said Sunday, among breaches of the NATO members' airspace that President Nicolae Sedan called inadmissible and intolerable. And from Gaza, medics and police officials said an Israeli airstrike killed a senior officer of the Hamas-run Palestinian Internal Security Service and an associate Sunday in central Gaza. And in exercises, the US and Japan joined the Philippines in maritime exercises in the South China Sea, the Philippine military said, prompting China to organize a patrol by its naval and air forces Sunday. And lastly, from Dear Heloise, ladder safety rules. Dear Heloise, last week my husband fell off a ladder when one of the rungs broke in half. He broke his wrist, but it could have been much worse. The clinic we went to gave my husband a list of ladder safety tips, and I thought I'd pass them along to you. All ladders have a weight and height limit. It's usually printed on a label somewhere on the ladder. Read it. Use both hands to climb, carry tools inside a tool belt. Paint every other step a bright colour to use as a visual when climbing. Do not overextend your reach while on a ladder. It's safer to just move the ladder. If you're working with or near electricity, use a wooden or fiberglass ladder. Do not use a metal ladder. And finally, inspect the ladder rungs to make sure none are broken or cracked. Following these rules may save someone's life or at least avoid an accident. And that information was from Jean D. in New Jersey. You can send a money-saving or time-saving hint to Heloise at heloise.com. H-E-L-O-I-S-E. I'll now take a short break and return with part two of today's reading of selections from the Panagraph for Monday, July 27, 2026, read by Janelle Eckerman. Please stay tuned.